You're listening to Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Living through this pandemic has a lot of folks stuck at home, glued to the news. Most people obviously want to know what's going on. How many cases of the virus? How many people have died? Where can you get a test? What's happening at the local hospital? Or what's City Hall doing? The governor? The president? You'd think this would be a banner time for news organizations, and in some ways it is. I mean, TV news, newspaper websites, radio stations, numbers are up. But here's the kicker. With so many businesses shut down, no sports, no live events, movie releases, you name it, fewer people are buying advertising. And that means big trouble for the people who bring you the news. As of a couple of weeks ago, the New York Times reported that some 33,000 workers at news companies all across the country have been laid off or furloughed or had their pay reduced. And some news companies have shut down for good. KCRW's Catherine Barnes is with us right now to talk more about this. Hi, Catherine.
Hey, Steve.
So we've seen a lot of changes, obviously, in the news media landscape here in Southern California in the past few weeks. Run us through some of the closures and layoffs that we're seeing here.
Yeah, it's affecting everyone from some of the biggest to smallest news organizations. The layoffs and closures seem to be hitting newspapers and other print publications first. Starting with one of the biggest in LA, the LA Times, they're furloughing staff, they're trimming salaries of some of their highest level managers and editors during the crisis. They've also consolidated their print sections to save money. And the Times parent company has also folded three of its community newspapers, the Burbank Leader, the Glendale News Press, and the La Cañada Valley Sun, because they were losing money. So those local papers have just gone away. Looking at the Southern California News Group, they run about 11 community papers, from the Orange County Register and the Daily News to the San Bernardino Sun. It's laid off many staffers from both the editorial and advertising sides. That's according to a report in Institutional Investor magazine. Going up the coast to Ventura, the Ventura County Star is owned by Gannett, which also owns USA Today. The Star is forcing its journalists to each take a week-long unpaid furlough once a month for at least 3 months. I spoke with Marianne Partridge. She's the editor-in-chief of a free weekly paper in Santa Barbara, where I live, called The Independent. And here's what she said.
Our advertising revenue has dropped by half, even over half. It reflects the very tough situation that's going out there in the business community and in the arts community. It's devastating. All the venues have, really closed down.
So, Catherine, what is the Santa Barbara Independent doing to stay afloat? How are they getting by?
Marianne Partridge and the publisher have had to furlough many of their part-time staff. They've cut the hours of most of their hourly workers. She says they do not plan to lay off full-timers, at least right now, especially those in the news department. The good news for them is that a couple months before the pandemic began, The Independent put up a paywall for their online content, and they've gotten about 1,500 digital subscribers since then. So that does help them pay some of the bills.
We're one of the first publications, free weekly publications in America, to have an online subscription service while keeping our print publication free. We are also asking our readers, for the first time in our 35-year history, to help support us through donations.
All right, those are newspapers, the newspaper business getting hit really hard. What about non-print news outlets, radio, television? How are they doing?
Well, TV relies less heavily on local small business advertising than print publications do. But TV isn't immune to this either. I mean, sports are a big driver of ads for TV, especially on stations that do a lot of sports programming, like ESPN or NBC or CBS. I mean, according to the digital research firm eMarketer, TV ad spending overall will be down between $7.5 and $10 billion compared to last year. Now, the jury is still a little out on radio, especially public radio. I actually asked our boss, the president of KCRW, Jennifer Farrow, how this pandemic is impacting our station's bottom line. And here's what she said.
Half of our revenue comes from underwriting, which is made up of performing arts venues and other ticketed events and concerts and other businesses that are right now at a complete standstill. So we're bracing for a continued slowdown in the economy that could have lasting effects, but we just can't plan.
Apart from underwriting, the other main portion of our budget comes from listener support. I mean, NPR affiliates like KCRW, all the way up to NPR itself, they're looking for big philanthropic support. If that doesn't happen, stations like ours could potentially be forced to go the same way as the newspapers, with hiring freezes, furloughs, or even layoffs.
NPR, I think, has been talking about how it's affected them. They've taken executive pay cuts and such, and a hiring freeze in effect over there as well. I know the irony of all of this, Catherine, is that while revenue is down, the hunger for news is actually up. We know that. There are so many people who need the information, want that information, as people try to make decisions about how to keep themselves and their loved ones safe, right?
Yeah, that's what I heard from everyone I spoke with. Marianne Partridge from The Independent, she said readership is definitely up and her staff has been communicating with their readers more than ever. It's the same here at KCRW, although fewer people are listening in their cars, perhaps. Our website traffic in February and March was up 25% compared to those same months last year. And our social posts got more than 200% more clicks than last year. So people are obviously really hungry for news and hungry for some type of engagement, too. I spoke with journalism professor Gabriel Kahn at USC, and he says that's one silver lining during this pandemic, that more people may realize the importance of local media.
I think that it's very clear to the public now how valuable good, clear local information is. And it is, I think, a duty of every citizen to step up and support these organizations, because particularly in times like this, we understand the value of having verified, responsible professional news organizations holding public health authorities to account, performing a vital, essential service.
Now, you hear Kahn saying journalism is essential, these local papers that are shutting down and those that are shrinking their staff. Can you put that, Catherine, into a little perspective for us? I mean, what kind of an effect can that have on the community that they serve?
Yeah, Professor Kahn likened news organizations to someone like your electricity provider or the people who repair your roads. He says it's difficult for life to function well without some type of local news coverage to help everyone understand the issues that their community is facing.
So there's been a decent amount of research on what happens to a community once local coverage dries up or disappears and you get what's called a news desert. One consequence is that usually the local government's borrowing costs actually go up, because without local news, there's often increased corruption because you no longer have a news organization holding accountable a local government. But local businesses also suffer, and there's some more subtle changes that also take place, because what local news really does is they allow a community to have a conversation with itself. And, you know, that's one of those things that you might not realize how essential it is until it's gone.
And I should say, the news deserts Kahn is talking about have been increasing well before the pandemic, especially as businesses started advertising on Facebook and Instagram rather than their local paper. But the COVID pandemic has suddenly made the situation a whole lot worse. And as you said, it's happening at a time when people really want and need to know what's going on.
It sure is. KCRW's Catherine Barnes. Catherine, thank you.
You're welcome, Steve.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Back now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. The conversations about reopening the economy and lifting stay-at-home orders are just beginning. And now, of course, the top priority is getting folks back to work. But workplaces and cities might look a little different from how they were. Some people are wondering how the positive changes that have happened, think cleaner air, less commuting, might extend into the future beyond just the initial COVID response crisis management. I'm going to turn now to Frances Anderton, who heads up KCRW's design and architecture desk, and she has a few ideas of how we move on past the COVID pandemic crisis, or at least the initial response to it. Hi, Francis.
Hello, Steve.
Something that we have talked about on this program is that the environment is getting a breather, if you will, right now, with fewer cars on the freeways. It's led to cleaner air, less pollution in greater LA. How do you imagine these changes playing a role in the future?
Well, I think I should just preface this by saying that oftentimes crises, while terrible, can also produce change and sometimes quite positive change. And certainly, I think a lot of people, including people in the design and planning communities, are looking at some of the fast adaptations that we have made in the last few weeks, including telecommuting, including transforming our homes into our offices, reducing our travel. And they're looking at some of the aspects of some of those changes and saying, you know, there's things that perhaps we could take away from this and carry them into the future and slightly adapt our environment to harness those adaptations in ways that might be better for all of us. So let's start with the clean air that you just mentioned. I mean, it's undeniable how wonderful it has been to see the skies, to see the stars at night, to breathe fresher air in these past weeks. We know this is due to the huge drop in travel and much more telecommuting that has economic implications. However, cities all over the world, including LA, have seen this drop in air pollution, which, as we understand it, is an underlying condition for COVID-19. So how about if moving forward, it might be possible to kind of enshrine that reduction in travel, that increase in telecommuting, not to the extent we've seen it now with this intense shelter in place that has caused extreme, perhaps, isolation for some people, not so healthy, but some sort of moderate sweet spot between those two extremes. And perhaps municipalities and companies could, as I say, actively encourage this. We did this in Los Angeles back in 1984 for the Olympics, when we wanted to reduce commuting patterns then. And in fact, I've spoken with Aaron Paley about this. He works on arts in public space. He co-founded Ciclovia. And he says there is a lesson to take away from that time that we could perhaps apply to our future now.
I think we could slightly rearrange the way we do things, that we could possibly reduce pollution, make getting around Los Angeles an easier and more enjoyable process, and change the way the city functions and works.
So if you're going to be traveling less, Francis, because you may be working from home more, do you need to update your home then, right? To make it more office-like, to have the technology, and dare I say, what about all those office buildings?
Well, this is an extremely interesting moment for both of those building types. And what we've seen in these last few weeks is a sort of hybridizing. We've seen small manufacturing pop up in people's houses as they start to make protective masks on 3D printers. We've obviously seen people telecommuting from home, et cetera, et cetera. So perhaps moving forward, some of these zoning categories have to be a bit more flexible. Perhaps house plans themselves have to be a bit more flexible. Certainly, I've spoken to many architects and interior designers who are coming up with concepts for how. And then there's another piece of all of this. There's already been quite a strong trend for something called well-being and creating environments that are non-toxic materials, good air quality, etc., etc. Well, preventing a pathogen from moving around fast makes good air quality really super important. And so perhaps what we might see in housing and houses moving forward is much more attention focused on making sure that people at every economic level have access to a little bit of outdoor space, a balcony, perhaps a small courtyard area, something to that effect, not just the very affluent. And then we might start seeing the really improvement of, say, ventilation systems. This is something we don't give too much thought to, but once we learn that a germ can travel through ventilation systems, it becomes much more key to change it. Someone who's been looking at that is Sam Lubell. He's an architecture critic. And he told me this.
There's clean air ventilation, which I think is going to be a big deal in homes now, filtering in fresh air rather than recirculating air, because that's obviously not very healthy when it comes to pathogens. And they, you know, especially in homes, but also in big apartment buildings where everybody, this recycled air is going from one apartment to the next. And these were all things that were sort of on the periphery that I think are going to become mainstream.
And I should say that Sam emphasized to me again that this should be something that crosses economic levels, that it's in places like prisons, in homeless shelters, that these pathogens can travel so fast. And so, you know, improving air quality, it should be applied to all types of environments.
And what about the cities going forward, the municipalities, Francis, the elected officials, right? And the company leaders, I mean, these are the folks that are going to have to get on board with this big picture idea. You're going to, your boss is going to have to let you work from home or let you live in a different city, you know, that may be far away, that's not in the densely populated LAs or New York or Chicago of the world, right?
Yes. And I think, again, as we said at the top, crisis can produce creativity. And so I think already there's going to be some company heads that are thinking about what might be some of the changes that they might implement, that maybe they don't have to spend so much on parking spaces for their employees because not so many need to come each day. But again, how about one uses this moment of crisis to think perhaps creatively about kind of what we want our economy to be moving ahead. For example, you know, is now the time to really encourage more manufacturing that lends itself to preparation for the next pandemic? We already saw how many Angelenos turned around and gave their time to doing that. How about enshrining some of that, stimulating perhaps those kind of areas of the economy, thinking about ways in which to have cleaner air, change the work patterns a little bit so that we can wind up with a place that people are happier in. You know, before this all happened, we were dealing with tremendous homelessness, with tremendous pollution, with traffic that was immovable. And this moment of pause caused by this shelter in place has a lot of us thinking about kind of what matters and what kind of economy and environment we want to be in moving forward.
Yes, Francis, the big picture, obviously, going forward, we're going to have a series of discussions, by the way, on the topic of what comes next after this pause, after this reset. And we'd love to hear from you about this. Send us your thoughts about what you'd like to see in post-pandemic greater LA. Is there anything from the time spent sheltering in place that you should maybe hold on to going forward? Reach out to us at kcrw.com/askgreaterla, or you can tweet at KCRW using the hashtag GreaterLA. Francis Anderton from our Design and Architecture desk. Francis, thank you.
You're so welcome, Steve.
Well, moving on with Greater LA on KCRW, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Yeah, traffic is way down in Southern California, along with the air pollution that goes along with it. Fewer cars on the freeway, cleaner air, right? That's a good thing. But if you've been staying home, no doubt you are itching to get out. Go for a walk, find some open space, get a little exercise. Problem is, of course, it can be a challenge to maintain that 6 feet or more of social distancing on a narrow sidewalk. One idea that's gaining some traction? Close off some streets to cars so pedestrians have more space to walk or to jog or to bike. You know, our regular contributor, Alyssa Walker of Curbed LA, is going to be a big fan of that idea, and she's with us right now. Hi, Alyssa.
Hi, Steve.
Now, if you had the gavel, I'm sure you would shut down pretty much every street to make sure that people could walk. What exactly is being proposed? Are there any proposals, formal proposals?
There is a proposal. I mean, as you noted, I think
a lot of people are experiencing something that I personally have complained about for a long time, is that our sidewalks are way too small to walk, or just in a regular situation to walk or run with multiple people. And especially when you're trying to keep 6 feet between you. I have two small kids as a family of four, and we're trying to get out together. We basically take over the whole sidewalk and people kind of jump out of our way to get into the street and go around us or into the parkway. And at the same time, right, trails are closed, playgrounds are closed, sports fields are closed. So we have very few options for how to get outside, except for this vast, ubiquitous, publicly owned network of public spaces that happen to be underutilized at the moment, our streets.
What specific streets and neighborhoods are we talking about? Are there proposals in certain places?
There's one proposal so far from the Del Rey neighborhood, which is on the west side, and the neighborhood council there has been working with LA City Council member Mike Bonin's team. They're looking at these certain streets based on needs. So, for example, they're picking streets that have a lot of multifamily housing, people in apartments or condos, where those families might not have as much access to outdoor space.
I know Mike Bonin, by the way, got into some trouble with the road diets, right, along Venice Boulevard. So he's probably really sensitive to what his constituents have to say about it.
Yes, I think he's also been a huge advocate for safe and open streets. So I do think it's a good move for them. So far, they've put together a map and they're soliciting feedback via email, like you said, to maybe and social media to head off any of those concerns and to make sure they've gotten appropriate community input. Like, are these the right streets? And the next step would be to get approval for a temporary street closure from the city's Department of Transportation, something like a block party type closure, I'm assuming. And that would maybe require getting neighbors to sign off on it. Although, you know, we're in a state of emergency, so it's possible the city could subvert that in some way.
Well, I mean, you mentioned state of emergency. If these were normal times, you would never think of closing off a street to allow more pedestrian traffic. I mean, at least on a broader scale. Disruptions to traffic would be smaller than the usual, though, because of what's going on right now.
Right, of course. I mean, you can't see too many people probably getting upset or, you know, worried about their street being closed or to limited traffic because traffic volumes are so greatly reduced right now. But I think this is where we also need to think a little more broadly about what the solution would be, because yes, there are fewer cars, but that also means if you go out there in these streets, drivers are going much faster. I don't know if you see this in your neighborhood, but people are driving a lot more quickly through the streets because there's not traffic. And that's a problem for people who aren't just out, you know, recreating, but have to walk or bike on certain streets to get essential needs like groceries, or they're trying to get to work. So how can we make this type of street closure work better for those people as well?
Do you think, I mean, when I'm thinking about this and it's like, oh, let's open the street, I think of a street party. And if you do something like that, then everybody's going to want to come out and be in the middle of it. And then all of a sudden, you don't have social distancing and you have a large group of people. Do you think
right.
It would work?
Right. I mean, we immediately think of this and we're like, oh, this is Ciclovia. And Ciclovia, you know, this month has actually been canceled because of that very reason. It would create a gathering. I think there are two major concerns. One is, you know, we're supposed to be staying home. That's the goal. We're not really supposed to be going out and hanging out and partying in the streets and having fun, partying 6 feet away from people in the streets, having fun, right? If these types of closures aren't done in many parts of the city at the same time, you're right. People who, you know, live a few neighborhoods over are going to go here just to use those streets. But also if it's deployed at scale, say we do this in a bunch of different neighborhoods, it's very difficult to see how it might be done without the city insisting on extra enforcement. And as we've seen in other cities, this has sometimes led to a large police presence and even citations for walkers or drivers who aren't following the rules. And those rules might not be clear to those people. So for many neighborhoods, having more police on streets would not be a welcome change.
Very quickly, before we let you go, Alyssa, assuming this gets approval, could these changes stick around?
This crisis has highlighted so many problems when it comes to equity in Los Angeles. We're seeing lack of public space, the fact that it's very dangerous to get around if you don't have a car. But what I'm hopeful about is so many people are seeing these problems in their own neighborhoods, and they'll be able to advocate for changes that make it safer and healthier for everyone to get around when this is over.
All right, Alyssa Walker, urbanism editor at Curbed LA, of course, a regular contributor here at Greater LA. Alyssa, stay safe.
You too, Steve.
And that's all we have time for today. I hope the coverage you're getting from KCRW is a part of your daily lifeline. I got to tell you, it's not easy, and it is not cheap. And yes, there is so much hurt in our community and across our nation. And a lot of budgets are tight at the moment. We get it. So today we ask that you give what you can, if you can. A small contribution from you feeds that lifeline for all of us. If you cannot give again, no worries. We're here for everyone. And in honor of KCRW's Matt Holzman, who passed away on Easter Sunday, we are all so sad from that. A group of his friends has put together an incredible $40,000 challenge grant to underscore the cause that Matt was so passionate about. It is a way of celebrating him and helping KCRW as well. That challenge ends at midnight tonight, and it helps your donation go even further. Go to kcrw.com/give. We need you now in this mission-critical fundraiser so we can be there for everyone in Greater LA for many months and years to come. So thank you for your support of KCRW. kcrw.com/give. While you're at the website, why not subscribe to our podcast as well? Share your thoughts with us. We asked you earlier, what kind of LA should emerge from this pandemic pause with fewer cars on the freeway, more telecommuting from work? What do you think the future should look like? kcrw.com/askgreaterLA. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great day. Find some beauty today.